Hello, I'm Chris Turner, and this is part two of the LM Radio story. The year 1947, and this was the year that the LM Radio story as we know it really began. For it was in 1947 when Richard Mayer took over as the managing agent for Lorenzo Marx radio concessionaire G.J. McHarry. Last time we heard how Richard Mayer employed David Davies as chief announcer and station manager. David has a very interesting story to tell about how he arrived or travelled to Lorenzo Marx the first time.
I was sent out, oddly enough, cash on delivery. I did actually get here and was paid for, because the concession, which is G.J. McHarry Proprietary Limited, with the Radio Club de Mozambique, had agreed to get me out here through Richard Mayer's recommendation. I hate to say this, but my Portuguese friends, had forgotten to send the fare and the ticket to Lisbon, and I arrived in Lisbon, and I went to the TAP offices and said, I'm going out to LM Radio. And I showed my papers and contract, and the chap said, well, the money hasn't arrived, but in view of the fact you've got to go, and the next plane going down, it was at that time a bi-monthly service, a Dakota. It took us 4 days to get here, by the way. And we took 4 days out. Anyway, in the Lisbon offices, in the Avenida Republica there, they said to me, well, look, Mr. Davies, this is obviously okay. We've got all your papers here and the letter of agreement. We'll send you out COD. And the only thing that did frighten me on the trip, it wasn't the bad weather we went through and the fact we only had two engines and 4 days to do the trip in, was that everybody on the plane, there were 10 of us on the plane, they were all Portuguese except myself, and the air hostess on the very first lap, which was from Lisbon to Casablanca, it was a filthy afternoon, it was a half-day run, it rained all the way down, the plane bumped all over the place. However, she served everybody on the plane with a decent lunch and a bottle of red wine or a glass of red wine. I didn't get anything, and I thought this had something to do with me travelling COD. And I thought, I've got 4 days of this to Lorenzo Marx Airport, I don't know how I'm going to exist. And currency control in London at the time was very bad. I only had about 10 quid on me and a few traveller's cheques, which nobody believed in, because it was just at the end of the war. And I was forced by sheer hunger and thirst in the end to say to the girl, do you mind, is there any reason why I don't get anything to eat? And she said, well, I'm a university student. I'm only doing this as a part-time job. And she said, quite frankly, I'd forgotten all about you, because she spoke English fluently. Because everybody else is Portuguese, and you're sitting in the back seat, which I was. And she said, I'm sorry, I forgot. So she said, no, you're entitled to everything everybody else is getting. Anyway, when I arrived in Lorenzo Marx 4 days later, after this very long and eventful trip, I was met by the Portuguese executives of the Radio Club de Mozambique, and my fare was duly paid on the spot. And the only person I knew in Lorenzo Marx I had met in the Middle East during the war, and I was so broke, I borrowed 1,000 escudos off him to get my first drink, which was at the Palace Bar in LM.
Jack a diamond, Jack a diamond, and I know you of old. You've a robbed my poor pockets of silver and gold. It's a whiskey, you villain, you've been my downfall. Kick me, you've covered me, but I love you for all. And it's a whiskey rye whiskey, whiskey I cry. If I don't get rye whiskey, well, I think I will die.
That's Tex Ritter in 1947 with rye whiskey. Until about 1950, LM Radio not only broadcast music and variety shows, but the station also carried soap operas and radio plays. The first detective series ever broadcast on radio in South Africa was a series of true stories entitled The Secrets of Scotland Yard. These were narrated by Clive Brooke, and this is how he introduced each story.
Mm-hmm. Clive Brook. You remember the story of the little boy who was carrying an even smaller boy up a hill? Someone stopped him and asked whether the burden was not too much for him. "This isn't a burden," he replied. "It's my brother." That was the sort of reply that Patrick Staunton might have given had anyone ever asked whether the weight of his brother's responsibilities was not sometimes too heavy for him to bear. The love that Patrick Staunton bore his younger brother Louis was something quite out of the ordinary, and it involved them both in a case that was also quite out of the ordinary. I want to tell you about it today. Few people can find anything good to say about a murderer, and yet most criminals have some virtue. It's just that it can't be seen for surrounding vices. For instance, there was a charm about Neville Heath. There was gentleness in Dr. Crippen. There was a sense of humor in Charlie Peace. There was a great deal of brotherly love in Patrick and Louis Staunton. It was the one quality which was constant in their approach to any person or any problem. It remained constant throughout their dealings in one of the most horrifying cases of the last century, the case of the brothers Staunton.
LM Radio recruited a number of announcers from both the UK and Australia. David Gordon, who had been a colleague of David Davies in North Africa, was one of the first. Another early recruitee was Australian Bernard Lynch. And it was through Bernard Lynch that Rob Vickers joined Lorenzo Marks Radio.
I had been working in theatre in Brisbane, and I was in a series of musical shows up there, and at the same time I was doing breakfast show on 4BH in Brisbane. And then the series of theatre shows came to an end, and I went back to Sydney and decided that I was going to London to make my fame and fortune, and little realizing that it was going to happen in South Africa. And a friend of mine, Bernard Lynch, who had a girlfriend in Sydney, and she worked in some kind of agency, and went to Bernard one day and said, "I've got two wonderful jobs going in Africa. I'm suggesting that you," to Bernard, and she mentioned me, Rob, "apply for it. You'll get the job because you're both experienced." Bernard had worked on 2SM at those days. "And you'll get the job, and you'll see Africa." So we thought about it, and I said, "I'm not so keen on going to Africa." And then we looked up where it was, Lorenzo Marks in those days, and I said, "No, I don't want to go to Africa. I want to go to London." But Bernard went, and he kept in touch with me, raved about Lorenzo Marks Radio, and eventually I decided I'd been working in England, but I couldn't take the cold anymore. And so I said, "I'm going back to Australia." And he said, "There's a job going here in Lorenzo Marks. Why don't you apply for it? You'll get it." So anyhow, I thought, all right, I'll go. I must say, that's when I met Richard Mayer, and who was the brains of the early LM days. And he auditioned me, and I went home. My mother was living in London. She said, "How did it go?" I said, "Oh, forget it. I'm not going to Africa. I'll never get that job." With that, I'm talking to my mother, and the phone rings. It's Richard Mayer. Typical Dick Mayer. He said, "I have booked you on the Langeby Castle." This is about 3 PM. I had the audition at 1. And he gave me the dates. "And call round tomorrow. You'll get your contract." And I had just done the audition. All right, you go for an audition. You expect to accept. But I thought the audition was very difficult. He had me doing everything except circus acts, I think, to get into radio. To make a long story short, I came. And so that's how that started. I was met there at Durban by a representative from LM Radio and taken to Johannesburg to meet the various managing agents, Richard Mayer. And that was the beginning of it all. I was taken to Lorenzo Marks and hated it. Hated it. I've never hated a place so much. What have I done? Then I couldn't get out of it. The second day that I was there, I went and booked my passage the day after my contract, right back to Sydney, you see. But those days we only had ships to travel on. But 3 months later, I just wakened up and I said, this is great. This is marvelous.
Whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid. While shivering in my shoes, I strike a careless pose and whistle a happy tune, and no one ever knows I'm afraid.
That's the Starlighters in 1951 with Whistle a Happy Tune.